All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast, Wednesday, October 17th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com for short. DFSR.com/deals gets you that free 3-day trial for the podcast listener. $24.95 instead of $29.95, so $5 off. That's free for 3 days, and then you get covered for optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, of course. We cover NFL as well in our main subscription package, premium chat, premium content. It's all there, $24.95 for podcast listeners. DFSR.com/deals will get you started, and you're all good to go. I'm going to give a quick warning here. We are recording this a day early. We're recording this for the Wednesday slate, so if we don't comment on Tuesday's basketball game, assume everything went perfectly, and the NBA, is, as always, just works out exactly the way you would expect. But if we don't comment on yesterday's games from the opening night, it's just because of time scheduling. We are covering this a day early, and I'll add some stuff in the show notes if there's stuff that we need to cover that comes up along the way, because NBA news is fluid, as we've already seen to start the early season. All right, so Wednesday is when we really get into it here. Go back and listen to our Tuesday podcast if you want to go back and listen to our thoughts on some of the FanDuel scoring and whatnot. But Wednesday is when things really kind of kick off with a majority of the games going down. We're going to roll through these game by game. Some of these games have more DFS implications than others. That's going to be the case for most of the season. Some of these teams play so slow, have so few guys, are tanking early, whatever. You know how it goes with NBA. So if we spend some more time on some teams than others, then you'll know why. I'll try to cover some of the offseason moves as well and how we think it affects affects things going forward. So Memphis and Indiana start off. Memphis, the big change for them is they get Conley back. They signed Kyle Anderson in the offseason. And then Indiana really doesn't change much at all, except they bring in Tyreke Evans to kind of come in off the bench. Do you see, with the way FanDuel and DraftKings are pricing things pretty fairly based on last year's stats, do we see, when we see teams like this that haven't moved all that much, I guess Conley coming back, but other than that, haven't moved all that much, are we getting any value? Is it possible to get any value on these teams, or do these teams strike you as needing to either A, play poorly for a little while to get some cheaper pricing, or sort of sustain an injury early, and then we can get a punt play in, because I'm not totally seeing it from this game.
Well, yeah, so I think there's a lot going on there. The first thing is that we can talk about the major ways we get value in DFS, NBA, and, especially if you're coming over from football or baseball or whatever else is your first season doing DFS, NBA, you might not be familiar with this, so we can kind of start with the basics, which is, you touched on a couple of them already. New opportunity is probably the biggest way someone will come onto our radar in the NBA, as in a starter gets hurt and you become the starter. If you play poorly for a while, you can see a slight depression in price. Those ones always feel a little bit awkward because you never quite know if someone's playing poorly because they're bad now or because they've been unlucky. There are some indicators we can follow, like, running bad from three tends to be luck-based versus, never getting any rebounds anymore could be an indicator of an injury or what have you. But the third one is matchup. And we will play fairly priced guys in good matchups because the sites, FanDuel and DraftKings anyway, tend not to price correct too often based on matchups. So, we'll talk about the Houston-New Orleans game later, but the guys on Houston will probably be the same price against New Orleans as they are in their future games, except for New Orleans was one of the very best matchups in the league last year. So, Houston does have some shakeups going into this season, but even if they didn't, you'd probably still play Harden, even though his price was the same, right? So as the season goes along and prices will tend to normalize, things will become more matchup-based. Early in the season, we're probably trying, if you really want to find those diamonds in the rough, those big tournament, high finishes, if you can be the one who can read the tea leaves and figure out how these teams are going to change their opportunity first, that's where a lot of money is going to be made early on.
So, yeah, and when we look at pace and matchup, these are two teams that played at the bottom, very bottom, slowest paces in the league last year. Memphis was third slowest, and Indiana was, seventh slowest. So
yeah, they were bottom
when you're two. Looking at, when you're just looking at these two very slow teams, really defensively efficient, obviously Memphis gets better with Conley, does get better with Anderson on defense as well, I'll say. They have some interesting rookies that are probably going to come into play more if there is an injury, and inevitably they're these are two teams, you know, Conley, we've seen a lot of injuries here in the past. But I will say, too, the Grizzlies are a little different this year. I do think they are trying to win. So last year, the minutes could be all over the place because they just kind of knew down the stretch that they were out of it. I don't think that's their plan this year. Signing Anderson, having Conley back, I think they're at least going to try to make a playoff run. The one thing that could mean is increased minutes around the steady rotation guys in a way that we haven't seen in the past. And I'm not willing to stick my neck out to understand who those guys are. Indiana, we're going to find times to play them. This is probably just not one of those days.
And Tyreek Evans' revenge game, by the way, going up against the Grizzlies after playing for them for whatever it was, like 50 one games last season. So
not even, I don't think.
He is probably pissed. He's ready to go.
So, and like I said, they bring in McDermott, they bring in Tyreek. These guys will probably have some opportunities.
But you're not going to play them against a slow team that plays great defense.
Definitely not. Next game on the list, Milwaukee and Charlotte. Again, two teams that don't see a ton of turnover. Milwaukee's big turnover is they get a new coach. Coach Bud is now with Milwaukee. I do think that is interesting from how they're going to use. They probably will just inevitably play smarter rotations in a way that they haven't really seen over the last couple of years with Kidd and company.
So you're saying that they're not going to just jam these guys for huge minutes? Or do you think that, because the reason to play Milwaukee guys in the past, like you played Middleton, because you could just get 40 minutes out of the guy. Same thing with Giannis when things would run good. Bledsoe was kind of hit or miss. But so are you saying like we're going to see fewer minutes out of those big names? Are they going to become, you know, kind of overpriced because of that?
I wouldn't be shocked if it comes out in the wash, if we see a few minutes, a minute or two less, and just a better offensive scheme, and so that actually makes up for some of the fantasy scoring, I think. Now, the one change that they did have is they bring in Brook Lopez in the offseason, and Lopez, for what it's really looked like, could really thrive here, especially if he's shooting threes. He was shooting threes in the preseason. We saw him shooting threes a lot for the Lakers last season. This is something that he's added to his game and is pretty good at it. And I think that if they're going to play a stretch five with Giannis, you know, Giannis working down lower, especially getting into the paint, then we could see a lot of fantasy upside. Like Giannis's, it wouldn't shock me to see Giannis's assists kind of increase more, just with a more proficient center on the team. That alone, like the difference between Brook Lopez from an offensive standpoint over like John Henson and Thon Maker is pretty significant. So again, that, you know, we can talk about what that means for them on defense. They probably will be worse with him, and we also don't know how many minutes he's going to play. They do have something of a log jam at center, but I find this team very interesting. This is probably, again, not the matchup I want to go overboard. I struggled with, what do you think with the minutes? Because we just saw like 37-38 minutes with Giannis. It really doesn't seem like that can, it's not going to increase at all. Like, do we want to just be maybe a little bearish on those minutes for guys like him and Middleton? They are going to start Brogdon at the two.
Yeah, I mean, my general philosophy early on in the season is when in doubt, I would just as soon not play guys in new situations unless there seems to be a huge price deficiency. So, you know, for these teams that have had, like even Indiana, like I'd like to see how the Tyreek addition changes the usage, right? Like, you can throw in these big pieces, and a coach is obviously a very big piece, and you just can't assume, like, especially with someone like Giannis, for all the superstars that are in the same situations or arguably better situations, like LeBron or something like that, you don't need to take the risk on these guys in similar situations or where, like you said, the only direction to go is down. Because Giannis was not only playing insane amount of minutes, he was also basically just had the ball in his hands constantly for a large portion of the season. And it's just really hard to sustain that. So chances are good he's either the same or worse. And when that's kind of the outcome matrix that you're looking at, why not just avoid it? Nah, probably not. I mean, like I said, or like you said, rather, Jeremy Lamb is a guy who can come in and for stretches and provide fantasy value when everything aligns for him perfectly. But Charlotte's just been one of these teams that's had a difficult time sustaining big time fantasy value. They tend to play their good players similar amounts of minutes, which doesn't create a lot of value. And those players tend not to be super explosive in the first place. So, like, you know, we'll play Kemba Walker here and there in the past anyway, when he would be up against the Brooklyns or New Orleans of the world. But nah, we're definitely not going to force it in a mediocre matchup with effectively a full slate to pick from here.
All right, next game actually does have a lot of DFS implications, and that's Miami goes in and plays Orlando. Miami is coming into this game pretty shorthanded already with injury stuff. James Johnson has been ruled out. Wayne Ellington has been ruled out. Deion Waiters has been ruled out. So that's, I mean, if you just figured at least the Waiters and Johnson piece of it, that is 2/5 of their projected starting lineup going into the season. is going to sit. And Ellington is a guy who saw enough minutes off the bench that I think we can sort of reapportion some of that. Oh, excuse me, Justice Winslow has also been ruled out as well. That was the other one. So that is a lot of wings that are not, are just coming in day one, not going to play. This is a team that hasn't changed at all. So I think we can actually make some pretty solid observations about what they plan to do. They lost no one and brought in no one, which is the only team to really do that.
All right, it's not easy to do. We're rolling it back. We feel like our team, we're good to go here.
So what do we want to do here? Because we have Dragic coming back. We have Richardson. Whiteside's a guy we can talk about. Where do you see, I think we have some decent comps. Where do you see as being some of the DFS upside plays, knowing about some of this injury stuff early?
Yeah, I mean, last season we saw guys like Tyler Johnson, Rodney Magruder. We saw those guys fill in and get very, very significant minutes. And they shouldn't have too tough a time paying off on a sub $4,000 price tag. We also saw guys like Dragic and Richardson provide more than enough value on price tags like these with the increased opportunity. So it really seems like there's just a lot to go around here. I don't know how else to put it. I guess like a trickier spot might be at the big position, because, you know, we saw like it sometimes it didn't even matter who was starting. Sometimes it was James Johnson, but he would play 11 minutes. I think they reached more of a sense of normalcy as the season progressed. You know, I think the big question, I guess, would be who gets those James Johnson minutes? Is it going to be a Linick? Will they go like Bam Adebayo for extra minutes? You know, I don't feel quite as confident on that one. And the price tag on a Linick is a little bit higher, but I think that at those wing positions, basically everyone is in play, particularly whoever gets named the starters.
I mean, it's a day ending why when James Johnson sits and a Linick starts and he disappoints. As a
well, that's what I'm saying. Like you don't, that's why I feel a lot more confident in the other ones for sure.
I still like Olynyk at his price points. I think I'd have no problem. Power forward is always such a difficult position to fill because you need to play two of them on FanDuel. So I think from that point of view, especially if we're going stars and scrubs and we need ways to just pay up for those superstars, Olynyk does strike me as a guy that has pretty big upside and he has a really low floor too. Like, so from the FanDuel knocking a price guy off, like I know that this isn't the perfect strategy because you want to just probably completely punt away a spot. But Olynyk is a guy that has had big upside when it's all rolling correctly for him.
So, absolutely.
Right now in our system, he is one of the best points per dollar plays. Assuming he gets the start, he just is the best points per dollar play at power forward. I really love Whiteside, man. The system really likes him. I do think their plan is just going to play him a lot. They did it in the preseason, and I know preseason is not a perfect one-to-one comp with what's going to happen, except when it's guys that they're not just like seeing what they have, right? This is just a guy that is a known quantity for them. And to run him a lot of preseason minutes, he played 27, 25, and 24 in the first three games and was basically like a double-double machine. And I know it's preseason, but I'm most confident in the minutes, I think. That's really what it is. We were worried about Whiteside's minutes going into last year. He's been given something of a vote of confidence from Spoelstra. They are shorthanded. It wouldn't shock me if he just played 30 minutes a game, like to start the season.
That doesn't seem outrageous. And if he did, he'd be an easy $75,000 to $8,000 player, right? So,
oh my God, easy. Yeah. Like, I think he's has such upside. Like, mm-hmm. He actually is another perfect guy for this new FanDuel thing, because if you can get a $6,900 player that has something like 6 to 7x upside,
oh, yeah,
on this price, then you just love this spot. So, and plus, I mean, it's Orlando too. Like, they have Vucevic and Mo Bamba, who the rookie, neither one, this is not a spot where they're going to need to take Whiteside off the court. Like, Orlando's not smart enough to figure out way, like what Philly did last year, which is like make him get off the court. Like, Orlando's not.
Yeah, I mean, they can put it down to Vuce. He could punish them a little bit, but nonetheless, I don't think you want to go crazy trying to worry about stuff like that, right? Like, I mean, foul trouble, it's something you want to account for. It should be part of your baseline projections. Understand the guys that are foul trouble risks. You know, like Boogie Cousins is always going to be riskier than LeBron James in the same price tag, because one will leave the game early more often than the other, right? But for your, especially for like big upside, for reasons like that, I think by and large, predicting foul trouble is extremely difficult, regardless of who the matchup is. So,
yeah. Orlando basically running back the same team here, which is to say they're going to be pretty damn bad again. Yeah. They did bring in Bamba, who looks like he gets some point is going to be pretty good. He's not going to start this season. They're going to start Jonathan Isaac at the small forward as they bring Simmons back, and I think they just want to play Isaac anyway because he's their young guy. I don't know what you like about this
team. Yeah,
you're
just not going to go crazy on it. These guys are all kind of expensive anyway, like Fournier, Isaac. Those guys are all in price tiers that they're just charging you for it, you know? Like, if you want to dream on that upside, you're paying for it. And on a huge slate like this, you can just get more safety elsewhere. I'm curious to know what you think about the point guard situation, though. On FanDuel, the only listed point guards are Augustine and Jerry and Grant that have any realistic chance at playing time. Do you think they split time? Are we just not interested? What are you thinking there?
I'm just not interested. If they played, you know, 24 minutes each, I wouldn't be surprised. It's a terrible matchup against Miami, too. Very slow team.
Yeah, well, we keep an eye on it, then. I think we find the minutes. Like, we've seen Augustine put up some serious numbers on price tags like these in the past. So if he plays like 30 minutes, even if he's not very good, definitely keep an eye on him going forward.
Moving on from this game is another game that has some fantasy implications. Brooklyn goes in and plays Detroit. Detroit, another squad that didn't do a ton in the offseason, but I think we can look at least their two big guys in Blake and Drummond and say, we know what we have. And I'm actually wondering if these guys are possibly coming at a discount. So Blake didn't play much of the preseason. He had some random scratches because of illness or something else. Weird stuff was going on with him. But from a usage standpoint, do we just see these two guys as basically the whole team this year? Because we know Brooklyn is still a very good fantasy matchup, especially against centers. Like, they haven't really done anything to address this at all. Do you think we see these guys, like Drummond played a lot of preseason minutes, and he was pretty, he's just kind of typical Drummond self. We've seen him like 20-20 against the Nets before. He's expensive, but is he one of the guys you maybe could like just make a pretty solid point for paying up for here?
Yeah, I think either. I'd actually potentially lean Blake here. I think the 82 price tag is kind of comical, actually, for him in this matchup. I think that's based on, like, I'd be really so curious to just be a fly on the wall when they're trying to come up with either the algorithm or the by-hand version of these initial prices. Because if you look at it on Blake's season last year, yeah, I get that he didn't sustain this price a lot of the time, but a lot of that was just because of, like, injury stuff. You know, playing weird minutes as he was being worked in and out. When he was just healthy and things were going, he was playing like a minimum 36-minute rotation outside of blowups. And if you don't think this is a blowout and you think he plays 36 minutes, he's going to crush his price tag. So, yeah, this definitely strikes me as a big-time opportunity game.
He's one of those mid-tier kind of guys, 8,000 on FanDuel, that winds up missing out. Exactly. And actually, one other interesting thing about Drummond here, a one mark change for him in the preseason, shot 15 three-pointers in the preseason. Oh, no, excuse me, 11 three-pointers. Now, didn't make any of them, 0 for 11. But he averaged 0.1 three-point attempts per game last year in 34 minutes, and he was shooting minimum 2 a game in his preseason numbers. That is just a different look. And here's the thing, too, with that. If that is going, the rebounding numbers didn't seem to take a hit with him moving away from the basket. But if he's going to move away from the basket a little bit more on offense, that is actually going to increase Blake's rebounding numbers. Because we saw those kind of take a dip when he was forced to play double inside with the Pistons. If part of the plan here is to kind of move he and Blake in and out, because Blake already will shoot threes, but Drummond hadn't before. I think that's going to be an interesting way to maybe just increase Blake's overall rebounding numbers as the season goes on. So just something to keep an eye out for as more of these centers start to do this. Like, we saw it from Brook Lopez the season before. I'm trying to think. There was one other guy we saw all of a sudden shooting threes, and I just can't think of who it was. Anyway, Drummond just is, if he's going to be one of these guys, even if he just shoots 30%, that is going to raise some of his scoring floor as well. Brooklyn, I don't know. They're just kind of the same team. A lot of guys that are going to play, you know, not more than 30 minutes a game. I don't see really any other way about it. Are we in for another season of Brooklyn just kind of waiting for an injury thing for Brooklyn, because otherwise they're just still doing the hockey line change kind of thing?
Yeah, and it's a bad matchup anyway. You know, bottom 10 pace for Detroit, top 10 defensive efficiency last season, top 11, sorry. So yeah, you're just not going to need to speculate on the Brooklyn thing too early on. Sure, you might be able to draw some value out here if you have the inside scoop on what Brooklyn's really going to do, say at the small forward position with DeMarre Carroll out, and go for it, you know? But I think for cash game purposes, you just don't need punts like these. This is like one of the major, you know, especially on FanDuel, DraftKings being a different animal here, but especially on FanDuel, where you're going to wind up throwing away a position basically every single night to throw out the lowest score. You're going to miss out on a lot of these mid-tier guys in the $4,000 to $6,000 range just already lose value, and so they need to really be exceptional values to be plays. And I think you're not going to bother speculating on the, you know, Jared Dudleys of the world unless he's your throwaway player who like might show up and do something. So yeah, that's
I had a completely impossible time with their minutes. How because they just brought yeah. in so Incredible. many the, they well and they just brought in more guys that that kind of can play, right? Like they're like, okay, well, Shabazz Napier's around now, and now we have Kenneth Faried here, and Ed Davis is here, and Jared Dudley, and I don't know, they lost some of these guys, but it just seems like they added more guys who could play. So, you know, we go down and audit and make sure that we have every single minute and every single shot accounted for every team within, you know, every single minute and then every single shot within reason, but every single minute accounted for. And some teams are easier than others. The Nets are just always so hard, and it didn't seem to get any easier until we saw a game, because one of those guys will play like 1 minute and we're just not exactly sure who it is to start the year. Another game with fantasy implications here. Atlanta goes in and plays the Knicks. Knicks have already announced their starting lineup, and they're going to go very small against Atlanta, which you can do because Atlanta's horrible. But they're going to start Trey Burke, Frank Nicotolina, and Tim Hardaway at the 1-3 with Lance Thomas at the 4 and then Cantor at the 5. Obviously still without Porzingis as he comes back from the ACL tear. These guys are very cheap on FanDuel and DraftKings. It really seems like the at least the two point guards, and I'm putting Frank and Burke there together, are going to play a lot of minutes because they have no real guard depth here at all. Can we just stack both these guys together on FanDuel at point guard and call it a day? Is there enough upside on each of these guys in a matchup against Atlanta?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, we saw Nicotolina go off on these price tags last season, like a $3,800 price tag. When he was playing 37, 40 minutes a game against Cleveland there, he was playing 10x on this price. So, right. And I don't think you need to just like count on 10x here, but I think you can very safely count on like 6 to 8x, and that's just ridiculous. Like if you can lock up production like that, you're going to do it even in this new FanDuel where you could throw a position away. Burke, you know, obviously he's like a little bit more expensive, but he was just such a consistent producer on these price tags. Like if you go back and, you know, it's ancient history now, but around mid-March when he was playing 30 plus minutes a game, you could go weeks and weeks with him not paying 5x points per dollar. And you're going to touch games where he does 9x and stuff like that too. So yeah, I mean, actually he has a 12x against Charlotte. The guy scored 62 fantasy points. Like, yeah, it's a ridiculous situation. Atlanta, very reasonable matchup for opposing point guards too. So I don't know, just seems like more of a mistake. I'm so curious. I wish our optimizer was just set up in a way that we could look forward today while we're recording this, because it just seems like there's almost too many good plays, and that can give you that like sick-to-your stomach feeling where you're like, well, this top lineup doesn't have Nicotolina, but this next one doesn't have Burke, and this one doesn't have any of the Detroit guys. What's going on here, you know? It's just
these are two guys that I would really prioritize.
Yeah, kind of have the, to, right?
The usage on Burke. I mean, this is a guy we've seen. The guy put up a 31 shot game. Like he right. will just shoot. He was averaging, even when he wasn't playing crazy minutes, was averaging, you know, 13 to 17 shots per game. Gets assist numbers as well. The team is horrible, but the good news is the Hawks are going to probably be the worst team in the whole league. Even with this injury news, the early line has the Knicks. I mean, how often are the Knicks going to be 3.5-point favorites against anybody? That's without Porzingis.
The answer is not often.
Not often at all. So if this is going to be all of the point guard minutes, and I really think it is, because really their only other guards off the bench right now are Kevin Knox, the rookie, and I think that's it. So I just think these guys have high floors, Burke especially because of the scoring. I really like the situation here. You don't need to play Hardaway on slates like this. He's just not the guy. Like if you want to go, you know, GPP flyer because he gets crazy from threes, great. From a cash game perspective, there's simply absolutely no reason at his price point to do it. Cantor kind of the same way, has some huge upside if this is the year that he starts playing 30 minutes a game, because they just can, because they're going to lose. I'm not really sure. And then I'm wondering your thoughts here on Atlanta. Now, the big news for them was they traded out of the third pick in the draft out of Doncic and to get Trae Young, which every smart NBA analyst said that was just an absolutely terrible move. Right. And Trae Young is still looks like he's, for all purposes, going to play and just lead the team in usage. They had one of the biggest usage guys lead the team in Schroeder. I think all that and more goes to Young. He's young and he's a rookie and he's not exactly cheap, but this is a good matchup. And if anyone's going to just take all the shots on the Hawks, it really seems like it's going to be Trae Young. Is he a guy that you can go like kind of shoot some upside on early in the season?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can always shoot upside on anyone, obviously, and he's talented. The opportunity should be there, but it just takes a lot to be a $6,000 player in the NBA. It's not super expensive, but it's not cheap either. And when you just have no established baseline for somebody, I just don't. That's not going to be the type of guy I personally stick my neck out on. I'm not going to do it in cash because it's uncertain, and for big tournaments, a lot of people are going to be willing to take that risk. So why not just do actual contrarian plays like playing players that people are bored of, you know, or just running both the Knicks guys. Like, I'm certainly not going to run him over Burke or Nick Talina, to say nothing of all of the other available point guards on the slate. So I don't think
Before the Knicks news came out, he was a guy that I was going to probably write up as a possible cash game play, because he sort of fit this middle tier salary guy that you sometimes need, and a lot of the other names around him did not look all that exciting. And I agree with you that I don't think you need to do it.
But what if he just blows? Like, you could just get to the NBA. You could be Michael Carter Williams, right? You can show up and have a lot of time on the court. You're shooting a lot, but it just, like, doesn't work yet. You know, like that. I know he was a high pick. He's a fifth overall pick, but, like, it's a lot of players who've been the fifth overall pick that just stink. So I don't know. I'll just need to see it. It won't take long. Like, if he shows me, if he comes out and does, you know, goes 10 for 18 or something in his first game and has some assists and whatever, some steals, then great, let's go. But just the very first game, why?
The only thing I would say that's different, that the reason that situation is different, is because in the NBA, minutes are king. And I just think he's going to play a lot of minutes. And you cannot be very good. Like, you know, when we get to the end of his career, are we going to say he's a good player or not? Who knows, right? He could be Trey Burke. But there's a are probably locked into low minutes, or excuse me, like, you know, low 30s minutes, and a guy that shoots a lot of threes, and he's just, you know, he is an excellent shooter. That's what he came out of college doing. And if he's going to just put up, like, I don't know, 16 to 20 shots per game, which I think is fairly reasonable.
Shots is so many shots. Like, how many rookies have averaged more than 16 shots a game?
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to do it. His preseason numbers had him just completely chucking. Like his per minute thing, they have no other scorers on the team. They want him to shoot all the time. They don't
shot
care
less than 40% from the field. Like,
all I'm saying is the reason I'm just saying that you've had high draft picks that have not turned out, it's not usually because, from a fantasy perspective, it's mostly just because they don't play that many minutes. That's all I'm saying.
Well, they wind up losing minutes because they're not very good. And
exactly. And I don't think that's going to be the case.
They won't at least probably start the season with that, sure. So, like, you're saying that probably there's no safer time for his minutes than right now, if that's indeed the plan. We don't exactly know, right? They have Jeremy Lin there. They have other guys, but...
Yeah, and mostly it was like the point guard was looking very thin to me. But not, and again, sure, the Knicks thing does solve a lot of that problem. Mm-hmm. The rest of the Hawks can just kind of just go. I mean, this game has a pretty high over-under, by the way, 214 thin spread that they see the teams at least putting up some points. All right, Cleveland goes in and plays Toronto. Cleveland, obviously, they lost some guy named LeBron James in the offseason. They drafted Sexton. They are going to – they're not going to be the worst team in the league, because that's going to be the Hawks, and a couple other teams here are pretty bad. And they still have – NBA-ish players, and that's probably the only thing that keeps them out of the total basement. And this team is going to be horrible. They're huge underdogs to Toronto going in. Two guys that I wrote up in filling in usage gaps. Obviously, losing LeBron opens up a ton of shots and other things like rebounds and assists for the Cavs. It's not one to one, because you're not going to translate all of his stats onto somebody else, because he's LeBron James and these guys aren't. And yet, there is still a lot of shots to go around. And the other team was DeRozan losing, or them swapping out DeRozan for Kawhi here. One, are you worried about blowout? Two, do we see just a return to Kevin Love, like peak Minnesota days, where he was just, you know, 24 points, 12 rebounds?
He was like a $12,000 player in those days. Kevin Love's a guy I very much have my eye on for this season. I don't think it'll take long for his price to move, because I think you could see some outlandish stats out of him. Now, he didn't quite have the same swagger in Cleveland. I hate to be like the swag police or whatever, but he just didn't seem to have it in that same regard. Like, he just didn't have the confidence. He wasn't taking the shots, but he's got to look around now, right? And be like, okay, Kyrie's gone. Good. LeBron's not even on the bench. Who else is supposed to shoot? Rodney? I don't know if I want to pass to him, you know? And yeah, I think you're going to see a big time Kevin Love renaissance. I think you'll see Jordan Clarkson potentially having a lot of usage when he's out there. And this isn't the game you're going to want to play these guys anyway.
No, I agree with you. I think we see Love move into just the highest usage guy on the team. I think we see them use him in the post a lot more, because that was just something that they weren't willing to do when they had LeBron, because they just kind of wanted him to be a 3-and-D sort of guy. And I agree with you. I don't know. The rest of this team is just pretty damn bad. They are completely devoid of people who can create their own shot, at least in the starting lineup, because they are going to start Hill, Hood, Osman, Love, and Thompson. So there's not a guy in that whole group that can make his own shot. This team's really going to struggle to score. I love Kawhi for Toronto. I think that he is going – this might be – I wouldn't be shocked if this was the lowest we see him for a while in terms of overall pricing. He's less than 10,000 on FanDuel to start the season. I know he did not play all year last year, so I completely get that. He looks totally healthy if the preseason is any judge. His 17.7 shots per game that he took 2 seasons ago is exactly how many DeRozan took last year, and they both kind of play in that mid-range. I think you can translate almost all the usage onto Kawhi in this offense and other things, you know, like steals and rebounds and assists, because he's just a better player than DeRozan straight up. Do you agree with me? Like, are we too low? Is he like, or is he just going to see nothing but price increase as the season goes on? I think it's nuts that he's only 9,600 on FanDuel.
I definitely don't think it's nuts. I feel enthusiastic about his prospects. I think, excuse me, Toronto is a definitively better situation than San Antonio simply based on the pace. Toronto, you know, top half of the league, San Antonio the second slowest pace overall, and you know, they're also just not shy about jerking around minutes, where Toronto culturally has been more comfortable just giving big minutes to their big names. So I think from that perspective, he is in a good situation here. I also just wonder, like, from a usage perspective, is it fundamentally that much better of a usage situation for him than it was in San Antonio? Like, San Antonio had Aldridge, okay. Toronto has Lowry. I don't think that's too different of a situation. Toronto is still not one of the most blistering teams in the whole NBA. I don't know. It's just like, he's never really been a $10,000 player in the past, and I don't know that, like, we're going to see nothing but pride. He's not going to be, I would be really surprised personally if he was a $12,000 player by the end of the season. I don't think he'll step into that Harden plus territory, but I think it's reasonable to be optimistic about his future on this price tag. I don't think I share, like, the unbridled, clear-cut $11,000 player sort of enthusiasm for him.
Yeah, I might have overstated a little bit, and I still think that this is way low. I think that right now, for our system's purposes, and I haven't really made any adjustments to his overall usage except to say, like, translating some of his historical stats, and I think that's pretty fair to do onto this team. I don't think it's crazy to say that the Toronto is so much fundamentally different than the Spurs, and just translating some of his historical numbers onto this price in this matchup, and the matchup helps him, obviously, too. We have him as actually from a small forward position on FanDuel, the best overall points per dollar guy. Like, not the best, you know, big money points per dollar, just the very best. It's a very weak position as well.
So yeah, I would feel, I feel nervous about hearing that. Like, I just think it's, you know, I guess I'm a nervous Nelly when it comes to this kind of thing, but it's just a new situation. Like, you just have to, unless it's like a demonstrably, obviously better situation. Like, if he was going from the Spurs to, like, I don't know, the Pelicans, and there was no one else around, and Anthony Davis had a broken leg or whatever, or a hangnail in his case. I don't know. I like the situation. I'm just not. Yeah, I just don't. I don't think he's a 10, I guess. I think he's like an 8.
I guess my other thing that I really like about him in terms of just like an overall usage and scoring standpoint is that this team doesn't really have much in the way of scoring. Like, they have, their starting lineup stands to be right now Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi, Ibaka, and Jonas, right? There are not a lot of just pure scorers on this team. And they have some guys on the bench, like Van Vliet. They have Dylan Wright's hurt. But, you know, they have some shooters, like Miles. But this is mostly a defensive team that is going to rely, like last year relied on DeRozan to score a lot of points. And that, I like him. And the other thing, too, is from a minutes perspective, Toronto's modus operandi right now is to like make Kawhi very happy to be here so that he re-signs with them. And sure, I think the way to do that is also to have a culture of winning and also kind of get yours, right? From like a stats perspective. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think that there's a lot of narrative that feeds into him playing a lot. I think there's a lot of narrative that feeds into him shooting a lot and just kind of being the guy on the team. I don't know. I'm higher than you. Maybe I shouldn't have said it's nuts to the price. Maybe that's overstating it. I'm very, very high on Kawhi's season this year. I think we are still buying low on his price tag, even though he's like, you know, right around a $10,000 player. The game that we're going to have a lot of focus on as well, New Orleans and Houston. It's 8:05 Eastern game. Biggest over-under of the day by far, 228.5 right now. Houston, 7.5-point favorites. They are coming into the season with a lot of overhaul. They gone are Ariza and Ryan Anderson. In is James Enos and Carmelo, Marquise Chris, although I don't think he's going to play. There's one other guy I'm missing in terms of who turned over. But it looks like, for all intents and purposes, this is still the Harden show. They're going to start PJ Tucker here at power forward, and Chris Paul obviously there as well, with Eric Gordon coming off the bench. Harden, is he just the big money guy to play for? Is this like an easy call in the new world order, and especially knowing there's cheap guys? Of the high-priced guys, is Harden does Harden have the highest floor of all those guys tonight?
I believe so. I think the Melo addition doesn't really hurt him very much. We saw Melo being willing to play third or worse fiddle last season, and I think that's a very nice situation for him here too. New Orleans played the fastest of any team in the whole NBA last season. They played middle of the road defense, but they're somewhat weak defending the point guard position. Yeah, they're just weak defending guards in general, and so they're going to have their hands absolutely full with both Paul and Harden. So yeah, I think Harden's a fantastic play. I guess I'm semi-concerned with the mouth to feed situation here, like Paul, Harden, Melo. You're starting to stack up. I know these guys are in different stages in their development, but yeah, they're starting to stack up. Some potential for a usage downgrade on Harden going forward. That being said, sub 12,000, yeah, just seems like a great spot. And you're just going to have to pay up for someone, right? So as you're giving that whole list, then like all the list of the big money guys, he'll be among that top group for sure.
Yep, I think that he'll probably, among the high price guys, will be the highest owned. I think it'll end up being correct. He's 11-7 on FanDuel. I just don't see a reason to get away from him. Paul, I'm always worried about a little bit about like guys like his minutes early in the season. We saw what happened when he started playing big minutes. At the end of the year, he just got hurt in the playoffs. It cost him the championship, probably. And so, now again, it's like one thing, but he's just oft injured. And I just don't, there's no reason they're going to extend him, I don't think, too much. Western Conference is probably a little tougher this year, so maybe they will feel the need to make sure he plays. I'm a little concerned that this team is like not nearly as good as they were last year, losing Ariza, losing Mbah Mute. I know the latter didn't play as much. I don't feel like they made huge – they definitely didn't make any improvements, I don't think. I think at best they're going to be the same. There's probably some regression coming for them as the season goes on. But then New Orleans also went through some transition of their own here. They brought in Julius Randle in the offseason. He looks like he's going to start a power forward with Mirotić coming off the bench. They now have Elfrid Payton at point guard. Never been known to play defense, is a guy that I just don't know why teams kind of keep recycling him. I guess, you know, there's people still think the Pedigree's going to be there. No team has seemed to want him up until this point, but he's gonna play point guard. What do we think about this team? That's a lot of turnover for a starting lineup that had Anthony Davis as basically the best fantasy player of all time down the stretch last season for like the last month or whatever.
Yep.
Is there so much turnover here that it's hard to project exactly where it goes? Because again, this is like 60% of the starting lineup with guys who have shown at least the ability to fill it up from a stat sheet point of view. And when stats go one place, they usually can't go the other. How do we want to project this New Orleans team, knowing that they are looking a little different than last year?
Yeah, so I think for starters, Brow is still going to be a great play going forward. Not clear that you want to play him as a heavy dog here against Houston. Just kind of why bother sometimes when it comes to bigs as underdogs? They can tend to lose minutes quickly. They aren't as involved in the offense when things are going poorly as well. So maybe you don't want to be there exactly. You have to think Brow is going to be pretty damn motivated. You have to think New Orleans will want to put the best foot forward. They've shown a tendency to want to play him big minutes in the past. So, yeah, I don't think it's absurd. The point guard situation, I'm mostly just curious to see how it plays out. I definitely don't think you need to jam Elfrid Payton at 6,700. Like, that just seems like, when has he really sustained this kind of price tag in the past on any sort of consistent basis? Like, he's basically needed 38-plus minutes. And New Orleans has this history of kind of oddly splitting point guard time. Now, part of it's personnel-based, right? They had Rondo, who has his own limitations, to say nothing of the headaches he can cause for a team. But part of that might be cultural, too. So I think we can take a wait and see here in a game where they're heavy underdogs. I do think it'd be pretty reasonable to speculate that the guys like Holiday, Davis, their minutes and usage aren't going to go anywhere. You could even take a flyer on someone like Etwan Moore. I think that he, you know, just based on that incredible usage we were seeing from him in the playoffs last season, it'd be hard for him to be horrendous on this price tag, but you probably just don't need to do it either. So that's my general Pelicans take right now.
I think Brow's just not a guy I really want to play with, pay overpay on this. Like, I think I'd rather play, I'd definitely rather play Harden in that same price tier. Maybe even Giannis too. I'm just a little worried that these guys like Randall and Payton don't help him from a fantasy perspective. That's all I mean by that. Like, do they make the team better or worse? It's probably just lateral moves both ways. But from a fantasy perspective, I just don't see how they help Davis just do what he was doing down the stretch, which was like maintaining a $13,000 salary or something like that. I think that's mostly where I land. I stand to be proven wrong with it. And I just don't think, I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if his price came down a little bit because these guys siphoned off some rebounds, siphoned off some other stuff, some blocks, some interior stuff, just because they have been known to do that. And again, these are, there's, you're somewhat hard capped in some of those stats. There's only so much to go around when it's all said and done. Moving into some of the more evening games, Minnesota goes in and plays San Antonio. Obviously, the big news for Minnesota is that Jimmy Butler hates being there, hates every single person on the team, called everybody out. It's been a huge disaster for them in the offseason. He demands a trade. They say they're going to trade him. They don't trade him. He's going to start. I just don't even know like what to do with this team. It probably helps that they're a team that didn't go through much change and all of them are priced fairly against the San Antonio team that you really never want to roster anyone against. So yep. I think that probably, is that, I mean, does that pretty much sum their situation up?
Yeah, it's a hard pass. I don't see any reason to play anyone against San Antonio almost ever. It would be a trickier discussion if it was like the Knicks point guards against San Antonio, but I'm not on this team where basically nothing's changed.
And then we get San Antonio. They bring in DeRozan in the offseason. They have some real big-time point guard issues because they lost Deontay Murray, and they also lost Derek White. And so now they're left with basically Patty Mills and Bryn Forbes, essentially, as like the only two guys that really can play point guard, unless there's something I'm missing here. They've been decimated at that position. Patty Mills is a guy that when he started our system, never seen a day where Patty Mills at 27 minutes isn't everywhere guy. I'm thankful that there's some other cheaper guys here. Is San Antonio a team that you want to take a wait and see, especially with DeRozan moving into that? I was going to say moving into the Kawhi role, but that's not even correct because Kawhi didn't even play last year. So
it's a funny team right now. I think Mills is definitely playable at 4,500. I mean, we saw in that closing series against Golden State last season, he was playing 32 to 36 minutes and paying value on this price tag with everything on the line. So I think it stands to reason that given that they haven't really added anyone, I think they're pretty unexcited by Bryn Forbes based on their usage of him in the past. Yeah, I think Mills is definitely a guy who you could play in cash games if for some reason, say, the Knicks situation didn't work out. Where DeRozan fits in this lineup is a very, very big point of curiosity to me because DeRozan is like kind of like a quintessential ball stopper, and he takes the ball in his hands a really long time. He's always towards the top of the league in terms of time of possession and almost always at the very top if you just got pure shooting guards and not like hybrid types like James Harden. So he's like to bounce the ball around in the lane, you know, work his way down, take those two-pointers. They tolerated it in Toronto. I'm just not sure if Pop is going to want to watch possessions like that as often as they were willing to deal with it in Toronto. So I'm just mostly very curious to see where he ends up. I think his price tag is very fair based on his Toronto usage when he did have the ball in his hands effectively nonstop. And San Antonio, it might be a little bit of a different routine. You know, we saw guys like Aldridge go from being a $10,000 player to an $8,000 player just by virtue of showing up in a more team-oriented offense. So does DeRozan get the same treatment, fall down to the 7,000s? That's kind of where I would project it, but I'll keep an open mind about it, but I'm not going to take a risk on him early either.
It's so funny because they just walk into the season sort of in the same situation they were last year, was they just have in the current modern day NBA, they don't have a single guy. Yep. I mean, I guess you can give Patty Mills, but they really don't have a single guy that shoots threes.
Yeah, both DeRozan and Aldridge are just long to mid-range two guys. Like,
there's not much I watch for in the preseason except for things like this, like fundamental differences in a way a guy plays. Like I said, like Drummond taking threes. That's a huge difference, right? Sure. Like, it's just like a thing he's
never done before. Yeah, we saw that with Boogie last year, right? And it played out.
Exactly. Like, and then I was like, okay, well, will this be the year that DeRozan starts taking threes? He took seven total in like 100 minutes of preseason. So at least from a preseason standpoint, that does not seem like it's going to be a plan. It seems like it's going to be a lot of like the long two game for San Antonio. I'm just not seeing it. I think we see price drops in some of these guys, and then maybe there's a time to buy when there's an injury. Utah goes into Sacramento. I very want to just say skip to this because Sacramento, they bring in Bagley, he's going to start. It's a terrible matchup. Is there anything? Yeah. Can we just move on from this? Because we're going to start running long if we start talking about the Utahs a little
bit. No, I think we can skip it. Sacramento incredibly goes down to the slowest team in the league last season. So, yeah, two bottom five pace teams. Not a lot of excitement here at all.
And like I said, they have Bagley. We'll be interested to see what happens with him. And I'll just take a wait and see if they're ever going to play their guys' minutes. This could be just another year in the tank for them. I don't know what incentive they would have to do it any other way. Interesting game, though, for the late slate, Dallas and Phoenix. Phoenix actually -1.5-point favorites against Dallas right now. So Dallas, big news here. They get Doncic in the offseason with the trade that probably is going to – really seems like they're going to win that trade. Harrison Barnes is out to start the year. They're going to face a Phoenix team that played really fast-paced and no defense last year. This game has a huge over-under. Looks like it's going to be pretty close. Where do we stand with like stacking some of these Dallas guys with no Barnes? I mean, Dennis Smith, I mean, the rookie Doncic, I mean, do we want to go there? They did bring in DeAndre Jordan in the offseason to kind of shore up that center role. This is a team that does look very different, but they get like this one of the best matchups you can get. How much do you want to stick your neck out knowing that you know, you don't often get to play the Suns, and that's especially with the guy with like, a usage guy with injuries.
Oh, I wish it was like any other team except Dallas playing the Suns today, because Dallas, like, how many times in the past have we tried to run Dallas guys only to be just totally confused and devastated by the way they deploy their players, or guys like Wesley Matthews being out there for a million minutes and doing nothing anyway in the big matchup. It's like such a painful team to roster outside of like the odd JJ Barea guys that you can just throw in there and kind of see what happens. I don't know. I mean, I think Dennis Smith Jr., he was fair on that price tag last year. Putting him in the best possible matchup from last year can't possibly hurt. I don't know that I want to touch the shooting guard situation until I know what the plan is in regular season play. Luka looks like a big prospect. 6,700, though. Like, it just seems like you're being punished for wanting to dream on the upside of young players, basically. And that doesn't feel like where I want to land. The actual fill-ins for Barnes in the past have always been rather uninspiring, too. Dorian Finney-Smith, like...
I'm worried about those guys mostly because of Doncic, right? Like I think that's where I kind of stand in terms of, like, yes, I don't care about those guys at all. One thing that I'm encouraged about with Dallas is I actually think from a minutes – so we were always kind of weird on the minutes with them, right? Because they're, you know, especially near the end of the season where they're tanking. This is a team, I think, that thinks they can win, and I think that makes a big difference. This is a team like that has an NBA-caliber starting five when everyone is healthy, right? The addition of Jordan signals that, right? They say, you don't bring in DeAndre Jordan unless you are trying to actually do something like make the playoffs, and I think that from that standpoint, when I was giving their minutes an audit, I was very bullish on their starters' minutes because again... You don't make these. You get an NBA ready guy in Doncic right away, and then you get DeAndre Jordan, who again, like, you don't bring him in unless you want to win. So I think if we saw a normalization around their starters' minutes, like we saw a little bit less of Dirk, way less of like the Max Klebers of the world and Finney Smiths and all these other Dwight Powells, I would not be shocked if we started seeing just very steady rotations out of that starting five. And if that's the case, then some of them might be priced too low, especially when we're looking at an injury to a guy that had a lot of usage. So I think that's where I want to be bullish. And like I said, this is just a fantastic matchup. Not that I think the Mavs are going to be good, but I think they're going to try to be good. And for the minute, from a minutes perspective, that's really just what wins the day in DFS. On the flip side of the ball, Suns are favorites here. They are going to walk into the season with Devin Booker as their point guard. It looks like he is going to play. He was hurt for the preseason, but I think he's going to walk out there and play. They bring in Ayton with the first overall pick. It looks like he's going to be an absolute star, just from at least from a fantasy perspective. They're going to start Trevor Ariza and Ryan Anderson. This is a team with a huge turnover as well. Three of five guys that you start in basketball are different on this team, with TJ Warren moving back to the bench. A lot of points. Dallas looks like it's going to probably try to play faster with this team. That's a team that's set up to play faster, not like they did in the past. What do we want to do? And we know they're favorites. Do we want to stick our necks out for any of these Suns guys?
Oh, probably not. it's a tricky situation. I didn't get to mention, just I actually do really like DeAndre Jordan in this matchup. Like you mentioned him coming over, but 7,500 seems very fair. I think he was potentially underutilized in his past stops too. So I do like him. Man, going up against Dallas, like these are just another one of those matchups year in, year out. Dallas is a bottom four pace team. Now, interestingly, last season they were also a terrible defensive efficiency team, so it sort of came out in the wash. But this season, given that they've added, you know, good defensive pieces like Jordan, it's hard to believe that that will stay the same. Like, I think they'll be just as slow but better defensively, and that means that you're going to need an awful lot of increase in opportunity in order for me to be interested. Guys like Ryan Anderson, when they've started in the past, listen, this guy can put up points in bunches when the shot's falling and so forth, but he's also older. He's been much worse on a points per minute basis, a fantasy points per minute basis recently. I don't know. Is there something about the Suns team that you really love that I'm not seeing? Because just going up against Dallas is typically a non-starter for me.
I do think Dallas will play faster. So I think that the pace we saw from them last year will not be the pace this year.
But it was the same pace that they saw for multiple years. It wasn't just last year. But you think that just this new team, like, what is it about this new team that makes you think they'll come up? Because we're talking like at least a 3-year stretch bottom two pace team.
I think we're going to see less possessions for Harrison Barnes, which was a big thing that slowed down their pace in the offensive sets when they would get him. I think he's just going to touch the ball less. I think that they have a team that's set up for quick possessions, like in terms of like how well, especially Doncic, can pass. And so I think, and then the way that they're going to use Jordan too, like they're just like rim running and stuff like that. I think that I don't think they're going to be slower than last year. Are they going to be demonstrably faster? I don't know, but I just don't think they're going to be slower than last year. These guys are mostly fairly priced because the Suns guys, at least, because we saw pretty steady opportunity from them last season. And that has been, that's really kind of the theme for these first couple days. If you had steady opportunity last year, then you are not going to be a bargain going into day one of the NBA. And that's really the only thing that's stopping me from like wanting to use them all that much. Like $7,200 on FanDuel for Ayton. I mean, it's just too expensive, right? Like, are they going to play these guys a lot of minutes? Maybe. They actually are a little deeper this year, the Suns are. And I think that they don't see themselves as being able to win right away, although the Ariza and Anderson thing maybe signaled that they're trying to do something. They're going to be horrible on defense. I think that's going to be, because Ryan Anderson's just about as bad as it gets. Anyways, I'm being long-winded and saying I'll probably just take a wait-and-see approach on the Suns. And I think it's interesting, their favorite. They're definitely going to be able to score. All right, last game going into here, and my thing just reset. Denver goes in and plays the Clippers. This is another one, huge over-under, 226. That's second only to the Houston-New Orleans game. -1 road favorites for Denver. Denver comes in with much of the same team. They're going to start Barton at the three now. I think that we probably see more minutes out of Jokic. Do we see more of a concentration on Denver? Denver's problem always seemed to be last year was they just didn't understand that they didn't play Jokic enough. Like, I think there's really no other way to put it. Like, there were just times where he sat for long stretches because Mike Malone was trying to make some point about his play or whatever. They really can't afford to do things like this anymore. Where does he come in terms of these big money guys? Because we've seen him be able to sustain almost like triple doubles, like from a daily, when he sees enough minutes. Is he in this class of guys that you want to just really, really pay up for, especially early in the season? He's sub 10,000 on FanDuel. Is he just like a huge bargain, sub 10,000? Because we see him sustaining like a $10,000, $11,000 price when it's all said and done if the minutes are there.
I think he is just an absurd bargain, to be honest with you. The last eight games, he paid 5x points per dollar on this price in each of them. And against some legitimate defenses, slow teams, like he, for all intents and purposes, is a mortal lock for a double-double in any given night. And he's also chipping in assists. I mean, three of his last four games, he had 9 or more assists. So if they're going to run the offense through him, this just seems like a mistake in early season pricing. Another one of those weird algorithm things like the Blake Griffin thing. Yes, he's much, much too cheap right now, I think.
The Clippers are going to start Marcin Gortat instead of DeAndre Jordan. They're kind of running back most of the team. I think it definitely helps Jokic that he just has another shooter in Barton on the court with him. Wilson Chandler was the small forward last year, who was kind of just in and out. This is just a good offensive team. It would be crazy for me to think that Jokic plays less than like negligent, I think, malpractice if he played less than like 36 minutes a game this year, just because
unless it was an injury related thing. Yeah,
but it never was last year. It was because he was doing things wrong or whatever. Like, he looks like his nose is stuffy. I don't know what the thing is that like made Mike Malone not want to play him, but these games where he played like 28, 29 minutes is just so terrible. They simply, I don't think, cannot do it. It's probably one of the reasons they just barely missed the playoffs last year. So I like Denver. Most of the rest of these guys are pretty fairly priced as far as I'm concerned because their opportunities haven't really changed. We could see a lot of minutes out of Jamal Murray with Isaiah Thomas out, though. Monte Morris did play a lot of preseason minutes at the point guard. And then the Clippers, they turned over DeAndre into Marcin. Most of the rest of this team is set. They do get Patrick Beverley back. They traded away Wesley Johnson, so they're pretty small here at the small forward. Mbah Moute is gonna sit to start the year. Do we see a lot of minutes out of these starters? Because their bench is very, very thin. After you get past the starting guys here, especially at the three and the four, they really don't have anybody except for like Mike Scott to back up Gallinari and Tobias Harris. Could we just see mid-30s minutes right away from some of these Clippers guys?
I think so. I think it's a team that doesn't have a shortage of guys that have produced when given opportunity in the past. Like you said, guys like Harris, Gallinari, hashtag revenge game as well. Even Lou Williams, Lou Williams was pushing $8,000 price tags when he was getting consistent minutes, even off the bench. And I don't know what's changed about this team that should stop that. He missed the last few games of the season, but there was a good stretch where he was playing mid-30s minutes and putting up 35 to 50 fantasy points a game. So a good fast matchup with Denver. I definitely think these Clippers guys are playable here.
Yep, and this is, again, the big over-under. So teams, Vegas does not see a lot of defense being played on either side of the ball here. A game that should stay close. It'll be interesting to pick it out. And like we said, I think we see Jokic is one of just the very best bargains of the day. All right, I think we covered about an hour into like close to Megapod status for the Wednesday opening slate here, NBA. We will be back talking NBA as much as possible during the week. Our NFL podcast is up as well. DFSR.com/deals will get you started. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. NFL, it's all covered under one subscription.
Free one-week trial, by the way. Big NBA special right now. Free one-week trial on the site. So you can check that out and get 7 days. You get football and basketball. That's pretty nuts.
All right, so you heard it there. DFSR.com/deals. Get started, buddy. Big Wednesday in basketball, the first one of many. Let's get it going. Talk to you sometime later in the week, probably Friday when we do our next NBA podcast.
Yeah.